the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome back to another Thursday, interview rip of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast here on the CBP Media Network. I should add, you know, tonight, everyone should be watching football, and some of you guys are actually going to spend it with me and Mike Campbell, which is amazing, but I hope after that you at least get to go check out the beginning of the Chiefs-Lions game. It's a big, big night, obviously, for football fans, but anyway, very excited to talk to Mike, friend of the show. It's his second appearance, and if you haven't listened to Money Talks or visit his website to see what they're up to, you absolutely should. We'll talk about that, of course, as we always do with our guests. But first, the sponsors, man. EasyDNS, best place to host your content. We host our website there. Host your email. We also have emails there. I'm pretty sure you can actually email me at joey@canadianbitcoiners.com. Don't quote me on that. Certainly, if it doesn't work, you can blame it on Mark and not on me. I'll tell you that much. So Mark, obviously, proprietor over there, CEO. We love him. He's been on the show. He's hosted the show. He's a friend of ours and a friend of the program, as well as a sponsor. So if you want to do virtual private server, VPS stuff, you can do it over there. Nostr Relay, BTC Pay Server, run your store over there. You can do GPG email, which is an encryption service that helps from, I think, scraping, data scraping, which is awesome these days, especially. If you listen to the other show we do for EasyDNS, Access of Easy, which we'll be recording after this, actually, you know all about all the different ways companies are looking into your data, man, to see what you're up to. Come on. You don't get to do that to them. Why should they get to do it to you? You should avoid that. So if you want to do any of that stuff and you're thinking about moving over, Mark and the team will help you, of course, if you use the code CBP Media or tell Mark we sent you, whatever, 50% off your initial buy, which you can't beat. No one gives you 50% off anything. I was at Metro today near my house here in Dundas. Nothing is 50% off. But if you, listener, viewer, head over to EasyDNS and want to start a website there, they'll give you 50% off, which is outstanding. And then, of course, the second sponsor, Bull Bitcoin. Man, these days, especially today, nice pump here. I don't know if you can see my block clock. I just got it out of storage today. Thanks to my wife for finding that for me in a beat up laptop bag deep, deep in the annals of the stuff we packed from our old house. Great place to buy KYC free Bitcoin. Head to any Canada Post, literally more Canada Post locations in Canada than Tim Hortons. You can go there. You don't have to show any ID. You use your Bull load code, which is the QR code you get when you sign up on their service. Head over and fund your account with cash up to $1,000 KYC free, which is great. And of course, bills, you pay your bills. My cat's decided he's going to get behind the camera right now. Of course he has. You pay your bills there. You can sell Bitcoin there. You can do all kinds of stuff with Bull Bitcoin. They have tons of services and they got more coming. Sorry about that. terrible timing for the cat if you're watching on video. Anyway, they got tons of stuff coming there. Francis actually mentioned the other day that they just had their best month ever. And I will tell you that it's directly related to the KYC free option at the post office. So head over mission.bullbitcoin.com/CBP, all lowercase, and you get $21 when you fund, help support the show, which we like, of course. And now, finally, with no further ado, the one, the only, Mike Campbell is here, Money Talks, the man, the legend, business analyst, investor. Sir, what's going on over there? How the heck have you been? I haven't talked to you in a few, actually, last time we spoke, I think I mentioned on your program that there was fake fruit on my counter. I was selling my house, and now here I am in my new digs, not quite finished, not quite studio ready, but at least I have a camera set up. What's going on where you are? How are things?
Well, I have no fake fruit. I mean, this has been a huge problem throughout the whole summer is where the heck is my fake fruit? But no, we don't have any. Everything's great. What an incredible summer of weather. I'm out in Victoria today. I spend most of my time in Victoria or up island. You know, the little vacation place we have. But yeah, it's been a spectacular summer, spectacular fall day. There's nothing to complain about.
I totally agree, man. So Mike, I should say that a lot of our listeners excited for the show. I've seen on Twitter, I don't know if you looked at your Twitter today, but a friend of the show, a young guy named Boomer, sent us a message and he's got a date planned tonight. And his date and him are choosing between, based on the weather, going to the driving range and listening to you and me. Can you believe somebody on a date would settle in with their significant other and listen to you and me talk about how this whole thing is on fire and pretty soon will be a smoldering pile of rubble instead of going to the driving range or watching a movie? I cannot believe that, but I'm thrilled to hear it.
I think that shows a great deal of wisdom on their part. I think, you know, that they're sitting there going, I hope that guy says something that impacts our lives or protects us in some way. But, and you know, and you can hack at the driving range any old day, but you can't do this every day. So
that's right. That's right.
Brilliant choices.
I totally agree. So, okay, Mike, you peddle in the heresy of information sharing over on Money Talks. And as you know, a lot of information these days being suppressed. And I want to share some of that with people. And you've got a lot of insight. You've got a lot of great guests. And I think that you're the right guy to talk to about some things we're seeing in Canada. Maybe we should start with yesterday's rate announcement, a pause from Tiff and the gang over at the BOC. I think the terminal rate stays at about 5.25%, I believe, or 5%, one of the two. And I'm curious, you know, first of all, what do you think of the decision? But also, you know, in terms of information flow in Canada, today, a whirlwind of commentary supporting and also against. I should mention that there's two sides to this coverage for the first time in a while. The Macklem decision, the Bank of Canada decision to stay put. Now, in your view, again, let me know what you think of the rate hike, but do you think that there's a sort of a commentariat alliance on one side or the other that maybe we haven't seen in other rate decisions or for other rate decisions? I think for a long time, people were supporting Macklem in his quest to, quote unquote, quell inflation. But now, Mike, I really think that that alliance is being broken if there ever was one. What do you think? What are your views on yesterday's pause?
Well, I don't think anyone was surprised. You know, I mean, first of all, we had our gross domestic product, our economy, in other words, you know, shrink in the second quarter. That was way off what the forecasts were. Everybody thought sort of, hey, we're going to go up 1%, 1.5% in that quarter. We dropped 0.2%. So it's not necessarily the drop of 0.2. That's a huge gap between what the forecasts were by the Bank of Canada, sort of the consensus analysts. So that surprise alone, I thought, would put that rate on hold. Plus, we've got other indicators. One of the things that's come through in this whole period, and we heard that from Jerome Powell. He's the head of the U.S. Federal Reserve, and he did a big speech up in Jackson Hole. One of the big messages he said is this is complex stuff. You know, we're trying to juggle a million variables here. In the case, literally, you're talking about, can you predict what 320 million Americans are going to do? Can you predict what 40 million, or was it 41, because they didn't count them very well, you know, are going to do? And let alone all the international, I mean, oil prices aren't set in Canada, copper prices aren't set in Canada, but they're very important to us. And I have sort of said, hallelujah. I mean, this, and it comes to a couple of areas here. Sorry, and you know me, Joey, I can go on and on, but I think these are key points. And one is, you know, we've got a huge contingent in the political field who think they can manage the economy, who think they can control the economy. What's impressive is that they seem to be able to be wrong all day long, and it doesn't bother them a bit. You know, remember, we're going back into December, you know, 2021, all of that whole period. Oh, inflation's not really a big problem. It's transitory. It's just a short-term thing. Well, it would have been tough to get that more wrong. We had central bankers saying rates are going to stay low longer than we anticipate. Low? You know, it was like 4 months later, they started this rocket ship going up and people are feeling the impact. There's an old line by J.P. Morgan that says, you know, you can ignore economics and finance, it won't ignore you. And I think this rate increase, because it's so abrupt, 10 increases, we got people looking at, I can't make my mortgage payments when I renew. I'm going to be out of my house. There are other squeezes we know, of course. You know, food prices are killing people. And I think way too often we've got sort of one side of the economy, and maybe they can afford it. Completely forget the other side of the economy. And that first side, that's called government. They literally, you know, have got so much wrong about this. But sorry, so back to the rate decision just quickly. No surprise, you know, I think the biggest story out of the rates, though, was the number of politicians who weighed in and said, oh, they should keep the rates low. Oh, thank goodness they kept the rates low. I can't tell you what a serious breach that is. And I just invite people to think about this. Independence of our major institutions, whether it's judicial, whether it's, we wish it was in the media, but that's been eroded into a lot of places. And obviously in the Bank of Canada, we wish they were completely independent from government. And so, and we've seen, we just got history is just full of, you want to have a terrible currency, you want hyperinflation, the proven recipe every time has been political interference in the central bank. But we need also independence in our judiciary. So, you know, we had back at that SNC-Lavalin scandal, you know, that Judy Wilson-Raybould, who was, you know, attorney general, literally resigned because she was getting interfered with. This is the most dangerous thing to us as individuals, and I haven't seen anyone talk about it. This is a consistent theme of government interference, and this time it was all parties. Every party part played a game in this. Let me show how virtuous I am. I'm on your side. Let's hope your rates don't go up. And there's a, I'm trying to think of his name, Rob Gillenzo, who's an associate professor at the U of T in economics. And he says, all they just displayed is how woefully ignorant they are of economics. And I'll say amen to that.
I think you're probably right. And actually, we should talk a bit about this recent wave, I almost want to say. I think we got about a quarter of the provincial and territorial leaders penning basically what becomes a love letter to Tiff Macklin. Please, sir, I don't want another. I mean, you're saying that you think this is eroded confidence. I think there's two stances on this. I happen to agree with yours, but in the interest of kind of making the other side, making the other side's point, isn't it true that a guy like you looks at that GDP number, like you said, a wide canyon size miss there from the sort of expectation, right, and says, okay, this is going to be a pause for sure. The data is clearly pointing toward pause, and so the premiers decide, I can score some points here by pretending that I influenced a rate pause, even though this was going to happen anyway, regardless of whether or not, I pour a glass of red wine and pour my heart out to Tiff in the media. And so I'm curious, two things. One, is there any credence to that, you think, when you think about what these guys are doing? There is some credence to that, you think. And then the other piece, Mike, do you really think the Bank of Canada at this stage, much the same as the press, much the same as the judiciary, as we're seeing, I think, in some of the convoy outcomes and procedural stuff, do you really think that they are independent? Or is that just really a, in-show-only type deal at this point?
I think the Bank of Canada is independent, and so is the Federal Reserve. But your first point, was this a political theater? I can't help but think it was. I mean, they could have listened to Money Talks 6 weeks ago, and for 6 weeks we said, they're not raising in September. That's not happening, I mean, it's just the data was there. You didn't have to have much smarts to do it. You just had to read what's going on. So they had to know it. Oh, gee, just a few days before the decision's made, they jump out in front of that one saying, we care about you. We're on your side. We're just like you. And we're hoping that the rates don't go up. And then they get to say, oh, maybe I had some influence. Or, oh, gosh, I'm so pleased. All of that stuff. I mean, we should never underestimate that when it comes to politics, politics is involved, and in that case, and I guess I don't want to lose though my point that this is such a dangerous thing. This is one area I don't think you could scratch an economist anywhere in this country and think, gee, that's a good idea. Let's have the same guys making decisions for political gain on so many other fronts, make them also for the Bank of Canada. And again, you want to have a currency destroyed? I'll give you one quick example and people go, oh, who cares about that? It happened today in Poland. Okay. So their central bank has been accused of going in lockstep, very influenced by the politics. They have an election coming up in October. They have 10% inflation. That is not the environment you lower interest rates, but they did 0.75%, from 6.75% to 6. Well, all that's going to do, you want inflation? We're going to give you just a little bit more now. You want a weaker, I think this zloty is the name of their currency. We're just going to have it a little bit weaker. It's a horrendous policy. But sorry, one more thing. They got 160 currencies in the world. About 145 are in big trouble. Every one of them is from political interference. Go to Venezuela. Go to South Africa. Go to Argentina. My gosh, I feel for them there. Go to Turkey. The list is a long one. All had political interference in their central bank, who make these short-term kind of thoughts like, let's get interest rates down before we have inflation down. And I'm just saying that we may be happy for 10 minutes. I can tell you the inflationary impact, the loss of confidence in our currency, well, it impacts everything we're doing, when your dollar doesn't buy much.
Yeah, it's very significant. And I think, one of the things that I've heard, and people are talking about this, I think correctly so, as a mortgage holder myself, I have a split mortgage, half variable, half fixed at this point. And I've seen a lot of people commenting in the press, both financial and sort of layman press, about the CPI basket in Canada. What is it made up of? Part of the issue that we're seeing here, and I think Macklin took a question on this afternoon, if I remember correctly. He certainly took one at the last press conference he did. Without the mortgage interest piece of the CPI basket, we're down to about 2.5%. That's the number that we're seeing now. And Macklem, I think, makes a valid point that the reason that we have to keep mortgage interest high is because it prevents structural inflation from showing up other places in the economy if you're forced to pay that mortgage down. You don't get goods inflation, services inflation at the same rate. Do you agree with that statement? And do you think that the bank is really sort of fighting against itself at this point? Because they, on one hand, they do have to keep those rates at a certain level to make sure inflation doesn't spiral out of control. But on the other hand, they're sort of contributing to their own basket. Does this really set the table, Mike, for something like, you know, I hate to say it because it's sort of become commonplace now. It's almost played out. A higher inflation target. Are we going to start targeting something higher, knowing that mortgage interest is going to contribute to it and has to keep goods and services inflation down?
Let me break that down to 27 parts. Just kidding. So, and I don't have that good a memory, so I'm going to back up a little bit here. But first of all, they've made it clear in the States and here that their goal is to retain credibility. They didn't have any credibility when they come out and tell us rates are going to stay low for longer. So people did go out and get into the mortgage market. Then they said, oh, it's only transitory once it arrived. Well, that was clearly incorrect. So they're worried about their credibility. And because again, the bank's job is to maintain the purchasing power of our currency. So it buys something. Remember, it's only a piece of paper. It makes no sense to accept a piece of paper. I'll tell you, I'll work for 40 hours. Can you give me paper in the end? You know, that's what it is. People don't realize that the whole system runs on confidence. And so you have confidence when you accept that paper that you can exchange it for something else. And again, I just want to remind people, they don't have that confidence in about 150 countries in the world right now. And it's devastating. So that was his big worry, and it continues to be. I think if he backed off on his target, boy, it would be tough to maintain the confidence. You know, it would be the old, whatever they said, we'd go, he's just kidding. You know, those cut-ups at the Bank of Canada, you know, or at the Federal Reserve, they're just kidders. So the other thing he didn't want to have happen is us expect inflation. That's where the real trouble comes. Because what's the other big dynamic in this country? Debt. Government owes a ton of money, record amounts of money, continues to build it, but so do individuals. Okay, so if the currency gets sort of, much weaker, everything becomes more expensive, by the way, that we import, but if it gets much weaker and they have to borrow money, I'm not lending them money at 3% if I expect inflation to go at 6%. Okay, again, this isn't stuff that I'm sort of theorizing. It's happening right now. And I'm sorry, I've got to give a little bit of a history lesson here. That way people can go, that guy's boring, but it's okay. But this one's, you know, you get warning signs along the way. And I call this the biggest financial event of a generation. And it wasn't noticed because I can only assume the media doesn't understand it. September 16th, 2019, the overnight lending market.
Right.
Okay. They need to borrow money for very short term. Might be for a day, 2 days, up to, you know, at that point, they've extended how long it can be, but say 2 weeks. And it's just normal. I don't have the cash flow, but I got a payroll to meet. Normal stuff. So they came, they said, how about an annualized rate of 2%? That's what we would have done. No. Because on the other side of borrowing, you better have a lender. The lender said, no, I'm not doing that at 2%. That went from 2 to 10% in 4 hours. Can you imagine if your mortgage went up 5 times, you know, in a few hours? That's what we're grappling with here. Because on the other side is people have to be willing to lend money. It's not an automatic that they can go raise money. And again, they've proven that in so many instances recently. Bank of England had a huge pension problem. They get, you know, and again, it's not hard to understand. Their pension was full of bonds that paid 1%. Oh, but you could get a bond at 4%. Who the hell wants the 1%? That's what happened to Silicon Valley Bank also. They needed to raise money, but all their bonds were like at 1%, but the market had moved to 4%. So you got a discount. You got to take a loss, in other words. You got to compensate me for taking 1% when I can get 4. That's the biggest danger we're seeing in sort of those markets. So we've seen lots of examples. So what happened? In both cases, central bank had to step in and be the buyer of those.
Yeah.
Who else wanted them? I don't want them. I mean, Japan's doing it absolutely right now as we speak. And they're the third largest economy in the world. They're in China sort of battling it out right now, but Japan's still there, but it's scary. So, you know, I go on, but I want to make sure people understand the devastation of a few things that are hitting us in the marketplace. And that is, you know, one is how much money is saved in bonds. But those bonds were saved, say, in Canada for about the last 5 years at much lower rates, actually longer than that, than we have right now.
Yeah.
Europe, since 2014, they had 0% bonds. Japan, it's 1989 when they started that trick. All the bonds in the book are losing money. So that's a huge financial stability issue as we speak right now. So I think the Bank of Canada is well aware of this. There's not going to be an easy way out. But I think they are independent in their deliberations. And in fact, I bet they had, you know, a beer laughing at the politicians who thought whatever they had to say was of value.
If I ever hear that Tiff Macklem is having a beer celebrating anything that he's done, Mike, I'm going to get super upset about that, okay?
Fair enough. I'm
of the opinion that that guy, you know, Mike, if I, during my performance review, had that track record, I think that I'd be in a little bit of trouble. I might not get as succeeds, you know what I mean? It might be a little lower than that. Now, one thing I want to talk about.
Keep in mind for a sec, they got $20 million in bonuses at the Bank of Canada.
I know. Yeah. We hardly ever talk about that, but it's insane.
Exactly. You're sort of going, what for? I mean, they were only out of their target by a mile, you know, and other things. I don't blame them, by the way, for the high interest rates. That came at a time when we had supply chain shortages. That came at a time when the federal government couldn't have shoveled it off the back of the truck any faster. Mm. Now, that in combination with the record low rates is what produced the inflation we're dealing with. But I can't let the government off the hook, and I won't let the Bank of Canada off the hook, you know, in getting there. And keep in mind again, you know, the polls tell us 55, 60% of Canadians are really in financial stress because of this. So
yeah, it's a high number of people. And, you know, you mentioned there the bond buying program. I think they call it BTFP in the States. Buy the effing paper is what I would call it. And one of the reasons that works is because, like you said, it's a confidence game. And in Canada here, you know, I think that confidence is waning maybe more than the 15 or so countries that have a quote unquote stable currency. I think more than we're willing to admit. And part of the reason for that is because we've decided to abandon our natural gifts as far as resources, oil, gas, forestry, and things of this nature. We've completely decided to turn tail on these things that really made us a country that was worth investing in for a long, long time, and contributed to a number of our growth spurts over the years. And we did have a few. Canada was a successful economy, and though it's not as productive anymore, certainly it was in the past. Now you've done a lot of work in terms of interviews and research on the, Mike, there's a kind term for this, I'll try and find it, the foolhardiness, let's say, of the current energy regime here. What in your view have been some of the major flashpoints as far as our reluctance to use oil to our advantage, especially in a time when certainly all Canadians could benefit from the resilience, the strength, and the confidence that something like that would bring to the CAD?
The challenge is that the climate change debate is emotional, it's irrational, and that has produced some of the things we've said. I mean, I'm fond of reminding people that in Europe, and Germany in particular, they couldn't figure out the sun didn't shine every day. They couldn't figure out that the wind didn't blow any day. So the implication was you needed backup power. Well, they didn't. And again, a lot of people just think about domestic, but that last year at this time, you know, Great Britain watched its electricity prices go up about tenfold. You know, I mean, because they didn't have any.
Yeah.
You know, they did. And, you know, Germany, I think it's going to go down as one of the really major mistakes of the last, you know, 50 years since the Second World War is decommissioning nuclear power without having a backup plan. Oh, what are you going to replace it with? Oh, you're running with wind and solar, are you? There's no debate about this stuff. It doesn't, you know, it's intermittent power. So who did they have to go to? Russia. Who financed the war in Ukraine? Germany and other parts of Europe. I mean, I don't even know if the word irony even begins to get there. And by the way, this is irony. So nobody spent more money, nobody talked more, nobody was more dominated by the green agenda than Germany. Mm. Guess who's the biggest coal user in Europe now? The biggest coal is Germany. Like, you think you might have wanted those nuclear power plants back. I mean, they were zero emissions, you know, that kind of thing. We're in an age, though, it's so spectacular with the mistakes. And back to your point about Canada. Now, keep in mind, This is Chrystia Freeland, who is our finance minister, deputy premier, our deputy prime minister. Mm-hmm. Okay, January 2021 to the Financial Times, because she used to work there, she gave him an interview. And she says, it doesn't matter what Canada does vis-a-vis emissions. We can't move the dial. And that's because we're 1.5% of global emissions. If every car in this country stopped running and was electric all of a sudden, 0.25% of emissions. Like, it's nothing. And by the way, the Parliamentary Budget Office more recently basically said the same thing. You know, he's not saying don't do anything, but let's keep in mind what we can't make a big difference. Not even, he didn't say big difference. He said it can't make a difference. So what did we give up? Well, billions of dollars in government revenue, mm-hmm. jobs, people, as I say, the prosperity that would have brought. And we can see, by the way, the importance already. Look at the Alberta budget that goes from deep in the hole to way up into surplus.
Yep.
But the point is, I think we could use that money with record deficits right now, record debt. And again, what did we get in return to saying no is my question all the time. I'm open to it. What did we get? Because we were not the people changing emissions. And one more fact that people don't seem to be right. Jerry DeMarco is our commissioner of environment and sustainable development, appointed by the Liberals. He came out and said, between 2015, that's when the government came into power, and 2021, the last data he had, no G7 nation had a worse record of reducing emissions than Canada. So what did we get? These are serious things when you're talking about a healthcare system that's under tremendous financial pressure. Obviously, we have some issues at the lower end of the income scale that I think many of us, I'd like to help out with. There's just so much more that we could have done with not getting the money given. We got nothing in return for canceling those. So, and setting the poll, by the way, I'm going to link it back to our conversation a moment ago about the message it sends when the government sort of even hints at interfering with the central bank. We already had a negative outlook for this country, that they think the government doesn't support business. They don't want any more. And we need foreigners to help finance those deficits and debts, but it's also to attract capital. All of that stuff's come together. And I can go on because they've given me way too many examples.
Well, it's sort of this constant stream of, whys, basically. Why did we, famously here in Ontario, I believe we, in partnership with the feds, put in, I think, $80 billion into a quote-unquote Volkswagen battery plant or something like that.
And it was $16 billion for Volkswagen.
Yeah.
And about $15 billion for Stellantis, both with electrical batteries, with the promise of job creation. Well, you know what? We've got this record low unemployment. People have retired. They've left the workforce. They didn't come back after COVID. Where are those people coming from? So if they do attract, thanks to government subsidies, workers into those plants and to build them, oh, good. We've robbed some other section of the economy. That just never added up. I don't think it was a priority, but I think that gets to what's happened here. I'm going to talk on Saturday on Money Talks on a Financial Times article that basically says, the headline was, "Why isn't Canada an economic powerhouse?" And to me, it gets to the heart. Very simple question, because it's not a priority. So, and I respect people have choices when they go to the voting booth. But I think what it is you have people who prioritize climate change and maybe some LGBTQ+ issues, and fair enough. And you have others who say, well, my life needs a lifestyle and needs a standard of living, so I support more economic approach. And I'm not saying one's right or wrong, but I am saying without doubt, there are consequences. And the fact that the OECD says Canada is going to be the worst performer of developed nations between now and 2060 for economic growth. We're also going to be the worst this decade, but they went further in the second study. Well, to me, I'm not surprised. That's the consequence. We have Bill Morneau. He's the former finance minister. Just recently in an interview, he said, Canada should be focusing on per capita productivity gains and capital investment. That's nowhere in the ball. This is a Liberal, by the way, and he's right. This is nowhere in the ballpark of the government, and the majority of Canadians, I'd say, because those who vote NDP, those who vote Liberal, good for them. That's absolutely their right. You can't make a case that that's a priority for them. So, yeah, that's how we got here.
It's quite a story. And actually, Ben Rabideau, who I know is a friend of yours, shared a graphic today. And it's interesting. It's this Canadian labor productivity versus population growth since 15, I think, or since around 15. I don't have it on me. But the contrast is staggering. A lot of people talk about this lack of, as you mentioned, per capita GDP. And GDP is a difficult thing to measure in the best of times. And so if you can't fudge a GDP number to look favorable in a time when really everybody is looking for a favorable GDP number, like everybody wants to see some positive news, it's pretty bad. Now, I guess the next logical question is, in your view, Mike, what is the sort of, you know, first step in restoring per capita GDP instead of this just, you know, sort of total GDP is going up thanks to uncounted immigration these days. I mean, it's, you know, 41 million, 42 million, what's a couple million people between friends, right? What do we do? What's the first step to fixing this?
Well, it's the equivalent, by the way, and you've nailed where what they've done with those numbers, because the per capita economic output has been dropping, flat or worse. Okay, but what did the government talk about? And I mean, it was a massive thing on Twitter with, I think everybody who was a Liberal MP came out and said, look at our GDP number. What they were saying was the equivalent of this. I've got a guy, he works, and he cuts one lawn. I've got 100 guys now. Did you see how many lawns we cut? Yeah, I did, 2. But you see, if you were just measuring how many lawns got cut, that sounds great. Hey, we doubled the amount of lawns we cut. But if you go, but wait a second, there's 100 of you working on it now. What are they doing? Sleeping on the job? You know, that's per capita. That's why you break it down. Economists don't use the gross number. They go, they really want to know how much per person are we doing. So I would think this, that you need capital investment. You need investment. So, I mean, when money flows in and all of a sudden new equipment, new machinery, new tech, all of those things, increasing our productivity comes in, that's when you get the results. So the first thing I think is to reverse the trend of, man, when we lost oil and gas as a place to invest, because again, we weren't considered a friendly jurisdiction, man, it just dried up and it was brutal. So we need to invite people back in. We have to see, but this, again, you have to remember, that's not a priority for this government. It's not, you know, the priority is climate change, or as I say, maybe some gender woke related progressive issues. And again, that's their right. But I always say, you got to know whatever you choose, there's a consequence. We're living that consequence just in the early days. You mentioned your friends listening tonight. Hi. But young people have got to get the biggest ace in the hole for the government is young people don't understand this stuff. They're not taught in school. Where are they supposed to learn it? Oh, I know, many talks. But, you know, where are you supposed to learn it? So they don't know the degree they're getting screwed. I mean, if you have this GDP flatline to decline, that tells me your standard of living is going down. I mean, there's no doubt. But here's back to the interest rate increase. We're just getting to the stage where people are noticing, gee, I'm either going to pay my mortgage or afford that escalated rent, or I've got to do less things. That's what we're talking about. Your standard of living goes down thanks directly to monetary and fiscal policy coming out of the government and the Bank of Canada in that period. So I'm just saying, this stuff does hit us. And I think you start with, we mentioned confidence. Absolutely the overlay I look at everything. When I hear government policy, I say, will that make people more confident or less? Well, you can't find one when it comes to, you know, if someone wants to invest, you know, in your country. I can't think of one that would make someone say, hey, that made me feel better. You know, so what did they do? They bribed Volkswagen with $16 billion, you know, of our money. They bribed Stellantis with another 15. Why? Isn't the discount on our workforce enough with the low Canadian dollar? Like, yeah. Not a 30% advantage over the U.S. workers right now. Oh, that wasn't enough? Oh, okay. I guess we got to ante up the dough. I think that was incredibly telling. And the other thing, because we could have an advantage, is they need certain battery materials. You know, that's what's happened more recently is the recognition for renewable or, you know, the old renewable grid or the EVs is, oh, China runs all that stuff. Not only do they mine the majority of it, they refine even more of it, you know, for batteries, et cetera. Well, we could answer that call. We've had 20 years of talk about the green economy and no one sat back and said, Why do you need to do that? And by the way, Joey, which is so funny, when I used to say that, sort of like somebody says they're going to build a house, you go, where are you getting the materials? I don't think that's an outrageous comment. Oh, you should see the flack I got for that. It's unbelievable. Like I'm going, what, you're mad because I'm asking where? It's a simple question. I'm not saying don't build them. I'm saying, where are you getting the stuff? Well, that's caught up to us now, but that could have been an advantage if we had acted much sooner.
We never act in a sort of, you know, we're never the first mover in these discussions, which has been frustrating to me as a millennial. And you're right. I think that people, especially younger than me, Mike, you know, there's a lot of conversation in my circles and older about how, and this is well known and it's well observed in the data, and you've talked about it on your program, I'm sure. Wages here have not kept up with cost of living in a way that's really not present in many first world economies. I think we are only basically with maybe a couple of European countries and Australia as far as the wages really being beat down to nothing. And, you know, I think that kids now, I don't know if you're a Reddit guy, but I frequent a couple of Reddits just to kind of get a feeling before we do our show about what is the mood out there. And one of the things that I always visit are the real estate Reddits in Canada. Yeah. And I gotta tell you, Mike, in terms of like where young people lay the blame, they lay the blame on these quote unquote landlords, as if landlord is like some kind of new class of Canadian citizen. They're citizens like you and me. They're doing things that the incentives invited them. In some cases, I would say you could use the word forced. They force them to do to protect themselves from what you and I have been talking about, this devaluing currency, this decrease in confidence in the economy. I don't know why. There's not a focus on what the issues are to help children and young adults understand, like, this is the reason why we're in this mess. It's affecting you in a way that's extremely negative. It's affecting things like family formation, mental health. Certainly, it changes the way people behave at the ballot box. And it's frustrating for me to hear all that stuff. And one of the things that bothers me as well, as far as debt in the country, is the amount of debt that's been created by, you know, things like HELOCs during low interest periods. Yes. People can't pay those things back. What do we do? I don't know. And, you know, as far as like, you know, your opinion on the real estate market, I'm curious, you know, is there a sort of a rational fix for this apart from just trying to flush people out of homes they maybe can't afford with longer for hire and things like this? Or is there a more rational way to do this? I mean, we see in Ontario, Doug Ford under some heat because he made deals with developers for greenbelt plots and greenbelt parcels. I think that's, you know, we can argue about the methods, but I think the ends in some respect have to justify the means at some point. Am I crazy there? Like, what are we doing on housing?
Well, the housing issue is another one of the easy. It's sort of like I just mentioned, you don't understand the sun doesn't shine. Well, how could they have brought in, we did a big show, you know, I remember the date, it was October 3rd, 2020. Why? Because the government announced its immigration targets at 500,000, 500,000, 500, but, you know, basically like that. But I also knew that the number of student visas, the government didn't know how many. I knew that as a fact. They did not know. Well, then you've got work visas, student visas. They're going to live somewhere. It was really that fundamental, though. It's not some deep ideological debate going on or, you know, someone's got, you could have lots of stuff or someone's got to take here. Did anyone not think that bringing in, for example, last year, 1,050,000, you know, into our population wasn't, they weren't going to live somewhere, you know? And by the way, I'll give you another, this is a depressing stat. In the 2 months, we crossed 40 million as a population in mid-June, June 17th. Mm-hmm. Within 2 months, 240,000 others had come in.
Oh my God.
Okay. So our rate of building is about 220,000 for a year. And it's actually going to be lower again this year. But it's like, it's so fundamental that the math doesn't work. The other side, I appreciate exactly what you said. Government is thrilled when they blame landlords. They are absolutely thrilled at that because the government's fingerprints are all over. A study out of looking at mid-range, well, Toronto mid-range, Vancouver mid-range, you know,
right.
Obviously that's expensive in Calgary. But looking at that, and bottom line is, you know, a quarter of the expenses, actually is a little higher, a quarter of the expense of a new build was all government. The number of things...
5% of a new build cost?
Yes. The number of things that add on, you know, and jurisdiction can be slightly different, but you're going to have all sorts of development levies. I'll give you one from the federal level. This comes out of the CIBC. Benjamin Tall is a good economist. He said, if you want the price of rental to go down, all you have to do is remove the HST on building materials.
Wow.
You know what the number was? Over $40,000 to $50,000 per unit. I mean, government, now you're not bad in Ontario. I feel sorry for someone out in British Columbia where they actually charge you significantly for the right to buy a place. It's called the property purchase tax. So you figured it all out. You know, I'm going to pay $1 million, you know, which is not unusual in Vancouver, you know, $1 million. Oh, on top of that, sorry, we'd like about $30,000 in property purchase tax or $25,000. That's a provincial level. Everywhere you look, this is, now, sorry, I'm give you a little more background than you probably want, but where is the money in this country? If governments are desperate for money, it's in housing.
Yeah.
Whether it's as an industry or whether it's in my personal wealth, you know, they come and the guy wants to rob you and say, I got nothing. I only got this house, you know. Oh, good. So the government can take part of that house. Look at them right now in Ontario looking at Airbnbs as a simple solution. But they're talking about private property.
That's right.
So just like and by the way, Nova Scotia did, with the population change and all of this, they did have a minister saying, well, we should make everyone take somebody into their house.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, this is what's happening. And I think but I'm not Johnny come lately at all. I've been talking about, you know, a politician who stood on a soapbox and said, I care about affordable housing, much in the way they said, I care about interest rates, you know, this week, or I want lower rates. It's just crocodile tears, and yet they turn around and they're the problem. There's just no doubt, though. I mean, you just have to understand all the development fees that hit, and it could be a transit fee that gets thrown onto it. Obviously, I just mentioned HST on building materials. You know, in Alberta, it's only there's no PST, but you know what I mean, like all across. And people go, oh gosh, where about that affordable housing? Yeah, which is, I'll bring my last point. You look around. I'm going to do something on Saturday about one of the agencies has a $37 billion budget to look up consumer complaints. Since 2019, they've had 27,000. Oh. They've not looked up one.
Perfect.
They've not looked up a single complaint. And we're seeing that all over. I mean, people who tried to get a passport a year ago know exactly what I'm talking about. People who were in Toronto's Pearson Airport waiting for a flight to go. You know, which was my favorite little shot on TV News. Let's pat the TV News on the back.
One of the best ever, that clip.
If people didn't see it, you've got this spokesperson saying how much improvement they have. The cameraman pans to the departure board behind her, and the number, like, it was all delays.
Yeah.
She's saying, oh, we've improved. But I'd like to know, look at people looking for a family doctor. And again, it's in major urban centers, it's more difficult, but rurals also have a shortage. I mean, I can't think of a thing that government's fingerprints are on that has been done efficiently and effectively. And the public is now finally waking up to suffering. And the one on housing, I wish people would know, when you go and look at that bill for a nice new apartment, 25% plus came from one level of government, some level. I mean, all three are involved. So
it's amazing. I don't know if you know this. I mean, you're the, you know, wacky stat of the week guy. In Toronto, Olivia Chow, sort of famous orange comrade at this point, you know, God rest the soul of Jack Layton, a great politician, whether you agree with his stance or not on things, but she wants to introduce a Toronto retail sales tax, I think 1% or 2% on purchases. Mike, do you know how much the city of Toronto spent on quote unquote committees to decide whether or not they should rename the street of Dundas because it's offensive? Yeah. Do you know how much they spent on that?
No, I don't. I don't.
$8 million. Does that sound about right to you? What do you think? What do you think they got for $8 million? You think they've got like, what do you think? A couple of spreadsheets, PDFs, maybe something bound, leather? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, people should be upset. I do, as you know, an award at the end of Money Talks called the Goofy Award. And so many times it features some outrageous expenditure. You know, we got an auditor, I'm trying to think her name, you know, Simons. She's the, you know, the figurehead for the Queen here in Canada.
Right. Governor General.
Governor General. Yeah, yeah. Looking for governor. Yeah, because I always have Auditor General in my mind. But Governor General and some of her expenses. You know, let me take 8 of my closest friends on a private plane to the book fair in Frankfurt. You know, the list just keeps going on. These are not unusual. And not enough people seem to be bothered by that. And I mean, I sort of like Henny Youngman was an old comedian in the 50s, before my time. and he always used to tell a joke and he says, I got a million of them. Well, when it comes to those kind of stories of misspending, I got a million of them. No, that's because I read the Auditor General's report of the Governor General's spending. But, you know, the list goes on. But again, I don't see the blowback for much of that stuff. Look at the Prime Minister, $6,000 a night suite when he went to the Queen's funeral. And I've recently been to London. You know what? You can get a pretty nice room at $5,000.
Yeah.
you know, I mean, they clearly spend our money differently than they'd spend their own money. And you know, the examples, as I say, are hundredfold, though. It's not just unique. Well, we mentioned as a bigger example, how did they give out $20 million in bonuses to the bank? How did they give out millions in bonuses at the CBC? Like, because of seven people watch it still, the TV news? Like, I was going to watch because I want to be one of a small group. You know, count me in one of the 10 people watching tonight. But that's how government's been operating. But it's now filtering through to us. That's what we are paying some of our tax dollars for. And I am shocked that people look at the problems in healthcare, look at the problems with passports, look at the problems. Vancouver Port ranks, I think off the top of my head, it's 358 out of 360.
It's near the bottom. That's right.
Yeah. Well, within one or two, it basically is the bottom. And Port's its size, it is literally the bottom. But I'm saying, and we've got a ton of people who say, I'd like government to fix this for me. Why would we hallucinate they can? I'm being serious. Can you do for whatever it is, whatever subject that you've done for finding a family doctor or get me a passport or running the ferries out in the west coast of British Columbia where you either get on a ferry or you wait 10 hours for the next one? I mean, everywhere you look, and yet the public still says, I wish government would fix that affordable housing problem. Actually, they caused it. So good luck with them fixing it.
It's crazy the amount of issues they've had scaling. I think that's one thing that people kind of miss. They miss maybe the forest for the trees on that. It's like this idea that in small communities, and you see this. I mean, this is fairly common that we talk about like the family level, the sort of streets and cul-de-sacs, whatever. People help each other, support each other, and things get done in a way that makes sense and is economic. But as soon as you start trying to scale government, it's difficult. Now, Mike, I got one last topic I want to cover with you, and I have to tell you, man, it's warmed my heart to hear you talk so passionately about CBDCs. As a Bitcoin show, we share this passion for, hatred is too strong a word, maybe not the right word, but let's call it a strong concern for the direction of which these things seem to be going. Many quote unquote public consultations, quote unquote, surveys, quote unquote, this is your chance for a comment. The Bank of Canada getting completely filleted on Twitter anytime they talk about CBDCs, along with other central banks around the world. Now, I'm curious, you're in the traditional investing space. Yep. What have you heard from your peers, your colleagues, friends of yours about CBDCs? Do they share your concern and my concern that this is going to be something that makes our lives and capital formation and tax efficiency and things of this nature, potentially even personal mobility at some level, more difficult in the future? Or do they not care? What do they think? What are they saying?
Well, first of all, I started covering that in October of 2020, because we counted seven central banks besides China was already well on the way, but seven others, including the Bank of Canada. I mean, I think the biggest concern, and COVID only exacerbated this concern, intensified, is that they're going to monitor everything we do. That's the thing that they'll be able to do with a digital currency. They'll be able to know. Then I go to Al Gore in COP26 in Glasgow. So that's 2 years ago. COP26. His statement is clear. He says, by this time next year, we'll be able to monitor every purchase someone makes and their carbon footprint as a result of that. God. So we'll be able to reward or punish. Again, we've seen so much of that. What was the COVID restrictions? Again, I'm not debating whether we should have them or not. I'm debating the government's willingness to put them in. And I'll come back to my other thing. What's the biggest issue for our government? Well, it's climate change. So I think it's naive to not think that we could get a system that rewards you for not having you know, a huge carbon footprint. But the main thing penalizes you that literally can come on and say, oh, you're over your monthly quota. You know, and if you ask me to bet if that's going to happen, my bet is yes. You know, I do that well before I said, no, it's not happening. And again, I'm just looking at the willingness to restrict individual freedom. I think that's another one of these old things about left and right are obsolete, clearly obsolete. It should be an embarrassment to the commentariat to use those terms without defining them. Because one of the definitions I would say is on the right, you've got people who are prioritizing individual freedom. People on the left are more in favor of censorship, for example. You know, it's a big war on free speech with Bill C-11, Bill C-36. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's here. There's no doubt of that. You know, offshoot of the cancel culture to some degree. Europe right now, they have a new digital act that is literally censorship.
Yeah.
And again, the worry there is who gets to decide what's, upsetting, basically, is all they're saying. If you're upset, we're going to be helping you. What's hate speech? You know, all of this kind of thing. So to say that they'd be willing to restrict our purchases is remarkably naive, in my opinion. How far it goes, we'll see, because there will be pushback. I think this is the essential debate that fires people up. Again, whether you like the trip, I'm always dismayed when people let their position on an issue not understand the alternative. Mm-hmm. So we have people who supported the truckers, many people who didn't. But to not understand where the other side was coming from just shows me you don't know the issue. And so in this case, it doesn't matter where you support more government intervention, and clearly a lot of people do, to not understand that people, there's another group who wants individual freedom out there, who prioritizes it. I think that's what we're seeing in a sort of a broad brush context there. So yeah, I think that's the worry about digital currencies, is the level of control in terms of monitoring us that will give them. And the evidence to suggest they don't seem to mind that idea.
Yeah, they've become very comfortable with this idea of surveilling and assessing the worth of your activities. Now, Mike, you've been...
And words, both.
Everything.
Look at Jordan Peterson.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, that was an absurdity.
It's being trained or something? Is that the College of Psychologists, something like that, is forcing him to retrain?
Yeah, they got anonymous complaints, not one from a client or a patient. Sorry, I should have said patient. He's a clinical psychologist. Not one of the complaints, but they got this sprinkle of complaints about political statement. He's not a fan of the prime minister, for example. You know, he's not a fan of, I don't know, the restrictions, you know, you name it. Nothing to do with his work. Mm-hmm. And yet they ruled in court. They were allowed to do it. He is now has to undergo a forced retraining about the media because he said things somebody didn't like. I mean, that's extreme though. I was shocked we'd gone so far because, as I say, it was a handful. None of them knew him. None of them were patients. So it's nothing about his professional. It was no comment really professionally. I mean, it was political that weren't popular and positions that are against the public narrative that way. And yeah, he lost.
We're experiencing some of these things for the first time, I think, together. And as a society, it's been heartening to see that there is a subsection maybe of Twitter or X that is concerned about these things and wants to share information with people and make other people aware, like you mentioned, on the other side. And that's what you do on Money Talks. Now, Mike, you've been a great guest, as always, as ever. And I want you to tell people where they can find Money Talks, what you got going on Saturday. I believe you have our mutual friend Doomberg on the show on Saturday. Tell us more about that.
Well, I've came across Doomberg when they first started. And again, I enjoy, I'm sincere. I worry about this. Do I like somebody's work because I happen to agree with it? I'm serious. I question myself all the time, or is there validity there? In this case, I was railing on about the use of natural gas for fertilizer. You restrict natural gas, you restrict or raise the price of fertilizer. The best trade I made, I think it was $2.20, was ammonia. Went up about 400% because again, the formula is very simple. Natural gas produces ammonia and urea. That's the ingredients for nitrogen-based fertilizer used throughout the world. you restrict those because we don't want fossil fuels. You know, fertilizer went up. Well, who can't afford fertilizer? The poor throughout the world at those prices. So they actually did it in Sri Lanka, and it was, I mean, an unmitigated disaster. Because the three things you can't fool with, and again, these are not things I've just come to realize, is food prices. Uh-oh, we're not doing well in that. Energy prices. Uh-oh. You know, and so you get to energy, you get to food, you know, you're driving, you're eating. We mentioned earlier, well, that's all I care about in inflation. I don't have to buy that couch this month, but I got to eat, you know, I got to live somewhere. You know, that's the rental side of the equation. And, you know, my gas is too expensive. So they did all of that. Sri Lanka was a basket case. Pakistan, a basket case, directly out of, because they couldn't afford these new things. So I come across Doomberg, and here's a guy, a group with real sophistication in these very areas, the chemistry of it in this. And I'm going, man, those guys are worth listening to. You know, they do their research. And that's how I would describe them, as a group that does their research. Energy's been a very prominent role because, of course, we all found out we needed it. You know, Germany found out, what? We need energy?
Go figure.
And what? I don't like gas at 250 that it hit in Vancouver or $5 in California. You know, all of those things. So they do an excellent analytical job of breaking these things down. They also are on board with, you know, what are you doing to, if you want renewables or you want EVs, where are you getting the material? And they go deep dive into that. So yeah, I'm excited to have them on. I enjoy their work. They've been on with us before, and I really recommend it. And that's this Saturday, we'll be doing that. And as you say, we've had just a huge array of terrific guests, you know, and that comes from, I read a lot and think, boy, this person is good. You know, I listen to them and I go, this person is good. And we've had just tremendous stuff, you know, because I think the number one issue for your friends, for my friends listening, is how do you protect yourself from the clear devaluation of the purchasing power of that paper you call money? Mm-hmm. But devastatingly so. I mean, we have to understand there are people who can't afford the food prices today. Look at the last, don't look at 1 month, look at the last 2 years, what they've been forced to pay. Same with gasoline's not on its highs, could go there again, think it will, but way above where it was 2 years ago. The rents are crazy. Can you believe it? Out in Vancouver, one bedroom over $3,000.
It's incredible. It's insane.
And that's after tax dollars. You know, it's the old, and I think of this all the, how do they do it? People are getting hurt by this stuff. So my goal is to protect them. And there are things you can do. And I mean, one of the best things we ever did on Money Talks is I probably did it about 65 times. Lock in your mortgage. Lock in your mortgage. Did I tell you to lock in your mortgage? Don't own bonds, for God's sakes. Do not own bonds. And we got on the energy bandwagon for this reason. Can we reproduce more paper out of thin air? Absolutely. Can we reproduce oil out of thin air? No. That's why commodities are in a long-term, not direct, but it's up, down, bull market.
Yeah.
And the more wheat, I love, you know, that kind of stuff, because there's still the fertilizer debate going on. So anyways, as you say, the one thing they can tell from what I've just said is that guy never shuts up.
Like, your insights and the mastery of history and the photographic memory for a bunch of names that I would never remember, having read only one article, two articles, CIBC economists, auditor generals, and generals of all types, it seems like, on tonight's show. And I encourage the CBP listeners to go check out Money Talks. I've been a fan of Money Talks for a long time. That's how we linked up. And Mike, as always, you've been a great guest. I appreciate you coming on tonight.
I appreciate being here, and I am sincerely worried about what awaits us. And ignorance is not going to get us through this problem. So I appreciate the opportunity to chat.
Absolutely. Take care, everyone. Mike, that was great.